friend in the head. Never mind that it was what he'd been asked to do, what Newt had wanted, what he'd pleaded for. Thomas had still pulled the trigger. He looked down, saw that his hands and legs were shaking, and he suddenly felt freezing cold.
"What have I done?"
he mumbled. But the others didn't say a word. The rest of the trip was a blur to Thomas. They passed more cranks, even had to shoot some launcher grenades out the window a couple of times. Then they were through the outer wall of the city, through the fence to the small airport, through the enormous door of the hangar, which was heavily guarded by more members of the right arm. Not much was said, and Thomas just did as he was told, went where he was supposed to go. They boarded the Berg, and he followed as they walked through it and did an inspection. But he never said a word. The pilot went to fire up the big ship. Lawrence disappeared somewhere, and Thomas found a couch in the common room. He lay down and stared at the metal grid of the ceiling. Since he'd killed Newt, he hadn't thought once about what he had set out to do. Free of Wicked, finally, and here he was voluntarily going back. He didn't care anymore. Whatever happened, happened. He knew that for the rest of his life he'd be haunted by what he'd seen. Chuck gasping for air while he bled to death, and now Newt screaming at him with raw, terrifying madness, and that last moment of sanity, eyes begging for mercy. Thomas closed his own, and the images were still there. It took a long time for him to fall asleep. Lawrence woke him up.
"Hey, rise and shine, boy. We'll be there in a few minutes. We're dropping your butt, then getting the hell out of there. No offense."
"None taken," Thomas groaned and swung his legs off the couch.
"How far will I have to walk to get there?"
"A few miles, don't worry. I don't think you'll have too many cranks to deal with. It's gotten cold in the wilderness. Might see a few angry moose, though. Wolves might try to eat your legs off. Nothing much." Thomas looked at the man, expecting a big grin, but he was busy in the corner putting things in order.
"A coat and your backpack are waiting for you at the cargo door," Lawrence said as he moved a small piece of equipment onto a shelf. "You've got food and water. We want to make sure you have a nice, enjoyable hike. Relish the joys of nature and all that."
Still no smile.
"Thanks," Thomas muttered.
He was trying so hard not to slide back into the dark pit of sadness in which he'd fallen asleep. He still couldn't get Chuck and Newt off his mind. Lawrence stopped what he was doing and turned to him.
"I'm only going to ask this once."
"What?"
"You sure about this? Everything I know about these people is rotten. They kidnap, torture, murder, do anything to get what they want. Seems crazy to let you waltz in there all by yourself."
For some reason, Thomas wasn't scared anymore.
"I'll be fine. Just make sure you come back."
Lawrence shook his head.
"You're either the bravest kid I ever met or plain crazy. Anyway, go get yourself a shower and fresh clothes. Gotta be some in the lockers."
Thomas didn't know how he looked at that moment, but he imagined something like a pale and lifeless zombie with dead eyes.
"Okay,"
he said, and headed off to try to wash some of the horror away. The Berg pitched, and Thomas held on to a bar in the wall as the ship lowered to the ground. The ramp door started cranking open with the squeal of hinges while they were still 100 feet up, and cool air blasted inside. The sound of the thrusters burning roared louder. Thomas could see that they were above a small clearing in a large forest of snow-dusted pine trees, so many that the Berg wouldn't be able to land. Thomas would have to jump. The ship descended and Thomas steadied himself.
"Good luck, boy,"
Lawrence said, nodding toward the ground when they got close.
"I'd tell you to be careful, but you're not an idiot, so I won't."
Thomas gave him a smile, hoping for one in return. He felt like he needed it, but got nothing.
"Okay, then. I'll get the device planted as soon as I get in. I'm sure everything will go down with no problems, right?" "I'll have little lizards flying out my nostrils if we have no problems,"
Lawrence replied, but there was kindness in his voice.
"Now get. Once you're out there, go that way."
He pointed to the left, toward the edge of the forest. Thomas pulled on a coat, slipped his arms through the straps of the backpack, then carefully walked down the big metal slab of the cargo door and crouched on its edge. It was only about 4 feet to the snow-covered ground, but he'd still have to be careful. He jumped and landed in a soft spot, a fresh snowdrift. All the while, his insides were numb. He'd killed Newt. He'd shot his own friend in the head. Chapter 57. The clearing was scattered with trunks of trees felled long ago. The tall, thick pines of the forest surrounded Thomas, reaching up to the sky like a wall of majestic towers. He shielded his eyes from the fierce wind as the berg boosted its thrusters and rose into the air, and he watched as it vanished into the southwestern sky. The air was crisp and cool, and the forest felt fresh, like he was standing in a brand new world, a place untouched by disease. He was sure that not many people got to see anything like this today, and he felt lucky. He tightened up his backpack and set out in the direction Lawrence had indicated, determined to make it there as quickly as possible. The less time he had to dwell on what he'd done to Newt, the better, and he knew that being alone out there in the wild would only give him too much time. He took the last few steps out of the snowy clearing and entered the darkness of the thick pines. He allowed their pleasantly overwhelming scent to wash over him, and he did his best to shut down his mind again and stop thinking altogether. He did pretty well, concentrating on his path, the sights and sounds of birds and squirrels and insects, the wonderful smells. His senses weren't used to such things, since he'd spent most of the life he remembered inside, not to mention the maze and the scorch. As he hiked through the woods, he found it hard to believe that such a different place, the scorch, could exist on the same planet. His mind wandered. He wondered what life would be like for all these animals if humans really did go away for good. He'd walked for over an hour when he finally reached the edge of the woods and a wide swatch of barren, rocky earth. Islands of dark brown dirt, devoid of vegetation, dappled the treeless expanse where the snow had been blown away by the wind. Craggy stones of all sizes dotted the land, which sloped toward a sudden drop-off, a huge cliff. Beyond that lay the ocean, its deep blue ending on the horizon, where in a sharp line it changed to the light blue of the brilliant sky. And resting on the edge of the cliff, about a mile ahead of him, was Wicked's headquarters. The complex was enormous, made up of wide, unadorned, interconnected buildings. The walls were peppered with narrow slits in the white cement, allowing for an occasional window. One rounded building rose up amid the others like a tower. The fierce weather of the region, mixed with the moisture from the sea, had taken its toll on the facades of the buildings. Cracks spiderwebbed the exteriors of the complex, but they looked like structures that would exist there forever, unyielding to whatever man or weather threw at it. It called to mind a barely held memory of something from storybooks, some sort of haunted asylum. It was the perfect place to house the organization trying to prevent the world from becoming just such a madhouse. A long, narrow road led away from the complex, disappearing into the forest. Thomas set out across the rock-strewn section of earth. An almost disturbing quiet settled over the land. The only thing he could hear besides the thump of his footsteps and his own breathing was the sound of distant waves breaking on the bottom of the cliff, and even that was faint. He was certain that the people at Wicked had spotted him by now. The security was surely thorough and tight. A scuttling sound, like clicks of metal against stone, made him stop and look to his right. As if summoned by the thought of security, a beetle blade stood perched on a boulder, its red eye gleaming in Thomas's direction. He remembered how it felt the first time he'd seen one of them inside the glade, just before it scurried away and into the small woods there. It seemed like a lifetime ago. He waved at the beetle blade, and then he kept walking. In 10 minutes, he'd be knocking on the door of Wicked, asking, for the first time, to be let in, not out. He made his way down the last section of the slope and stepped onto an icy sidewalk that encircled the campus. It looked like there'd once been an effort to make the grounds a little prettier than the barren land around it, but the bushes and flowers and trees had long succumbed to winter, and the patches of gray dirt he could see amid the snow bore only weeds. Thomas walked along the paved lane, wondering why no one had come to greet him yet. Maybe the rat man was inside, watching, guessing that Thomas had finally come over to their side. Two more beetle blades captured his attention, both roaming the snow-covered weeds of the flower beds, scanning left and right with their red beams as they scuttled along. Thomas looked up at the closest set of windows but saw only darkness. The glass was heavily tinted. A rumble coming from behind made him turn to look. A storm was moving in, its clouds dark and heavy, but it was still a few miles distant. As he watched, several bolts of lightning zigzagged across the grayness, and it took him back to the scorch, to that awful rain of lightning that had met them as they approached the city. He could only hope the weather wasn't so bad this far north. He resumed his path along the sidewalk and slowed as he approached the front entrance. A large set of glass doors awaited him, and a sudden, almost painful surge of memory pounded inside his skull. The escape from the maze, the flight through the corridors of Wicked, coming out these doors into the pouring rain. He looked to his right into a small parking lot, where an old bus squatted next to a row of cars. It had to be the same one that had run over that poor, flare-infested woman, then whisked them away to those dorms, where their minds were played with, and a flat trans eventually took them to the scorch. And now, after all he'd been through, he stood at Wicked's threshold, there by his own choice. He reached out and knocked on the cold, dark glass in front of him. He could see nothing on the other side. Almost immediately, a series of locks disengaged, one after the other. Then one of the doors swung out. Jansen, who'd always be the rat man to Thomas, extended a hand.
"Welcome back, Thomas," he said. "No one believed me, but I've been saying all along that you'd return. I'm glad you made the right choice."
"Let's just get on with it," Thomas said. He'd do this, he'd play the part, but he didn't have to be nice about it.
"Sounds like an excellent idea."
Jansen stepped back and bowed slightly.
"After you."
With a chill along his spine to match the frosty weather outside, Thomas walked past the rat man and entered Wicked's headquarters. Chapter 58. Thomas stepped into a wide lobby with a few couches and chairs, fronted by a large, empty desk. It was different from the ones he'd seen the last time he was there. The furniture was colorful and bright, but it did nothing to perk up the dreary feel of the place.
"I thought we'd spend a few minutes in my office," Jansen said, and pointed down the hallway that branched off to the right of the lobby.
They started walking that way.
"We're terribly sorry about what happened in Denver. A shame to lose a city with such potential. All the more reason we need to get this done and get it done quickly."
"What is it you have to do?" he forced himself to ask.
"We'll discuss everything in my office. Our lead team is there."
The device hidden in his backpack weighed heavily on Thomas's thoughts. Somehow, he had to get it planted as soon as possible and get the clock ticking.
"That's fine," he said. "But I really need to use the bathroom first."
It was the simplest idea he could come up with, and the only sure way to get a minute alone.
"There's one just up ahead," the rat man replied.
They turned a corner and continued down an even duller corridor that led to the men's room.
"I'll wait out here," Jansen said, with a nod toward the door.
Thomas went inside without saying a word. He pulled the device from his backpack and looked around. There was a wooden cabinet for storing toiletries above the sink, and the top of it had a lip just tall enough that Thomas could slip the gadget in and it would be concealed. He flushed the toilet and then turned on the water at the sink. He activated the device as he'd been taught, wincing at the slight beep that sounded, then reached up and deposited it on top of the cabinet. After shutting off the water, he calmed himself while the hand blower ran its course. Then he stepped back into the hallway.
"All finished?"
Jansen asked, annoyingly polite.
"All finished," Thomas replied.
They continued walking, passing a few crookedly hung portraits of Chancellor Page, just like the ones on the posters in Denver. "Am I ever going to meet the Chancellor?" Thomas finally asked, curious about the woman.
"Chancellor Page is very busy," Jansen answered. "You have to remember, Thomas, completing the blueprint and finalizing the cure are only the beginning. We're still organizing the logistics of getting it out to the masses. Most of the team is working hard at it as we speak."
"What makes you so sure this will work? Why just me?" Jansen glanced at him, flashed his rodent-like smile.
"I know, Thomas. I believe it with every ounce of my being, and I promise you'll get the credit you deserve."
For some reason, Thomas thought of Newt just then.
"I don't want any credit."
"Here we are,"
the man replied, ignoring Thomas. They'd reached an unmarked door, and the rat man let him inside. Two people, a man and a woman, sat facing a desk. Thomas didn't recognize them. The woman wore a dark pantsuit and had long red hair, and thin-framed glasses were perched on her nose. The man was bald, angular, and skinny, dressed in green scrubs.
"These are my associates," Jansen said,
already moving to sit behind the desk. He motioned for Thomas to take the third seat between his two visitors, which he did.
"Dr. Wright," he pointed at the woman, "is our lead psych, and Dr. Christensen, our lead physician. We have a lot to discuss, so you'll pardon me if I'm short on introductions."
"Why am I the final candidate?" Thomas asked, cutting to the chase. Jansen gathered himself, needlessly moving things around on his desk before sitting back and folding his hands on his lap.
"Excellent question. We had a handful of, pardon the term, subjects slated in the beginning to compete for this honor. Recently it was narrowed to you and Teresa. But she has a way of following orders that you don't. Your tendency toward free thinking is what ultimately determined that you are the final candidate."
Played to the end, Thomas thought bitterly. His own attempts to rebel had turned out to be exactly what they wanted. Every ounce of his anger was directed at the man sitting in front of him, at the rat man. To Thomas, Jansen had come to represent wicked from top to bottom. "Let's just get this over with," he said. He did his best to hide it, but he could hear the fury in his own voice. Jansen seemed unfazed.
"Some patience, please. This won't take long. Keep in mind that collecting the kill zone patterns is a delicate operation. We're dealing with your mind, and the slightest mishap in what you're thinking or interpreting or perceiving can render the resultant findings worthless."
"Yes," Dr. Wright added, tucking her hair behind an ear. "I know A.D. Jansen told you about the importance of coming back, and we're glad you made the decision." Her voice was soft and pleasant and somehow exuded intelligence. Dr. Christensen cleared his throat, then spoke, his voice thin and reedy. Thomas immediately disliked him.
"I don't know how you could have made any other decision. The whole world's on the verge of collapse, and you can help save it."
"So say you," Thomas responded.
"Exactly," Jansen said. "So we say. Everything is ready. But there's still a little more to tell you so you can understand this decision you've made."
"A little more to tell me?" Thomas repeated. "Isn't the whole point of the variables that I don't know everything? Aren't you going to throw me in a cage with gorillas or something? Maybe make me walk through a field of landmines? Dump me in the ocean, see if I can swim back to shore?"
"Just tell him the rest," Dr. Christensen answered.
"The rest?" Thomas asked.
"Yes, Thomas," Jansen said through a sigh. "The rest. After all the trials, after all the studies, after all the patterns that have been collected and scrutinized, after all the variables we've put you and your friends through, it comes down to this."
Thomas didn't say anything. He was barely able to breathe because of a strange anticipation, the simultaneous desires to know and not know. Jansen leaned forward, elbows on desk, a grave look shadowing his face.
"One final thing."
"And what's that?"
"Thomas, we need your brain."
Chapter 59. Thomas's heartbeat sped up to rattling thumps in his chest. He knew that the man wasn't testing him. They'd gone as far as they could in analyzing reactions and brain patterns. Now they'd chosen the person best suited to take a part in their effort to build the cure. Suddenly, the right arm couldn't get there fast enough.
My brain? He forced himself to repeat.
Yes, Dr. Christensen answered. The final candidate holds the missing piece to complete the data for the blueprint, but we had no way to tell until we monitored the patterns against the variables. Vivisection will give us our final data, your system's functioning properly while we do it. Not that you'll feel any pain. We'll heavily sedate you until...
He didn't need to finish. His words drifted off into silence, and the three wicked scientists awaited Thomas's response. But he couldn't speak. He'd faced death countless times over what he could remember of his life, yet he'd always done so in the desperate hope to survive, doing anything in his power to last one more day. But this was different. He didn't just have to last through some trial until his rescuers came. This was something he wouldn't come back from. This was the end if they didn't come. He had a random, horrible thought. Did Teresa know about this? It surprised him how deeply the idea hurt.
Thomas, Jansen asked, breaking Thomas's train of thought. I know this must come as quite a shock to you. I need you to understand that this is not a test. This is not a variable, and I'm not lying to you. We think we can complete the blueprint for the cure by analyzing your brain tissue and how, combined with the patterns we've collected, its physical makeup allows it to resist the flare virus's power. The trials were all created so we wouldn't have to just cut everyone open. Our whole aim was to save lives, not waste them.
We've been collecting and analyzing the patterns for years, and you've been the strongest by far in your reactions to the variables, Dr. Wright continued. We've known for a long time, and it was the highest priority to keep this from the subjects, that in the end we'd have to choose the best candidate for this last procedure.
Dr. Christensen went on to outline the process while Thomas listened in numb silence.
You have to be alive but not awake. We'll sedate you and numb the area of the incision, and there aren't any nerves in the brain, so it's a relatively painless process. Unfortunately, you won't recover from our neural explorations. The procedure is fatal, but the results will be invaluable.
And if it doesn't work? Thomas asked. All he could see was Newt's final moments. What if Thomas could prevent that horrible death for countless others? The psych's eyes flickered with discomfort.
Then we'll keep working at it. But we have every confidence.
Thomas cut her off, unable to help himself.
But you don't, do you? You've been paying people to steal more immune subjects.
He said the word with vicious spite.
So you can start all over again.
No one answered at first. Then Jansen said,
We will do whatever it takes to find a cure, with as little loss of life as possible. Nothing else needs to be said on the matter.
Why are we even talking? Thomas asked.
Why not just grab me and tie me down, rip out my brain?
Dr. Christensen answered,
Because you're our final candidate. You were part of the bridge between our founders and the current staff. We're trying to show you the respect you deserve. It's our hope that you'll make the choice yourself.
Thomas, do you need a minute?
Dr. Wright asked.
I know this is difficult, and I assure you we don't take it lightly. What we're asking for is a huge sacrifice. Will you donate your brain to science? Will you allow us to put the final pieces of the puzzle together? Take another step toward a cure for the good of the human race?
Thomas didn't know what to say. He couldn't believe the turn of events. After everything, could it be true that they only needed one more death? The right arm was coming. Newt's image seared across his mind.
I need to be alone, he finally got out. Please.
For the first time, a part of him actually wanted to give in. Let them do this. Even if there was only a small chance that it would work.
You'll be doing the right thing, Dr. Christensen said. And don't worry. You're not going to feel an ounce of pain.
Thomas didn't want to hear another word. I just need some time alone before all this begins.
Fair enough, Jansen said, standing up. We'll accompany you to the medical facilities and get you in a private room for a while, though we need to get things started soon.
Thomas leaned forward and put his head in his hands, staring at the floor. The plan he'd concocted with the right arm suddenly seemed foolish beyond measure. Even if he could escape this group, even if he wanted to now, how would he survive until his friends arrived?
Thomas? Dr. Wright asked, reaching out to put a hand on his back. Are you okay? Do you have any more questions?
Thomas sat up, brushed her hand away.
Just let's go where you said.
The air suddenly seemed to go out of Jansen's office, and Thomas's chest tightened. He stood and walked to the door, opened it, and stepped out into the hallway. It was all too much. Chapter 60. Thomas followed the doctors, but his mind was racing. He didn't know what to do. There was no way to communicate with the right arm, and he'd lost his ability to speak inside Teresa's, or Aris's, mind. They turned a couple of corners, and the zigzagging made Thomas think of the maze. He almost wished he were back there. Things were so much simpler then.
There's a room right up here on the left, Jansen explained. I already put a typing pad in there if you'd like to leave any messages for your friends. I'll figure out a way to deliver them.
I'll make sure you get something to eat also, Dr. Wright called out from behind.
Their politeness annoyed Thomas. He remembered stories of killers being put to death in the old days. They always got a last meal, too, as fancy as they wanted it.
I want steak, he said, stopping to look at her, and shrimp, and lobster, and pancakes, and a candy bar. I'm sorry, you'll have to settle for a couple of sandwiches.
Thomas sighed.
Figures.
Thomas sat in a soft chair, staring at the typing pad on the small table in front of him. He had no intention of writing a note to anyone, but he didn't know what else to do. The situation had proven to be way more complicated than he could have imagined. He didn't know what he'd expected, but the notion that they'd dissect him alive had never crossed his mind. He'd figured whatever they did, he could just play along until the right arm showed up. But there wouldn't be any coming back from playing along now. He finally typed goodbye messages to Minho and Brenda, just in case he ended up dead. Then he rested his head in his arms until the food arrived. He ate slowly, then rested again. He could only hope his friends showed up in time. Either way, he certainly wouldn't leave this room until he absolutely had to. He dozed as he waited, the minutes stretching on. A knock at the door startled him awake.
Thomas, came the muffled voice of Jansen. We really need to get things started.
The words lit a fire of panic in Thomas.
I'm not ready yet.
He knew he sounded ridiculous. After a long pause, Jansen said,
I'm afraid we don't have much of a choice.
But,
Thomas began, but before he could pull his thoughts together, the door opened and Jansen stepped inside.
Thomas, waiting will only make it worse. We need to go.
Thomas didn't know what to do. He was surprised that they'd been so calm with him so far. He realized he'd pushed it to the limit and he'd run out of time. He took a deep breath.
Let's get it over with.
The rat man smiled.
Follow me.
Jansen led Thomas to a prep room with a wheeled bed surrounded by all kinds of monitors and several nurses. Dr. Christensen was there, dressed from head to toe in scrubs, a surgical mask already in place on his face. Thomas could only see his eyes, but he looked eager to get started.
So that's it? Thomas asked.
A surge of panic raced through his gut, and it felt as if something were trying to chew through his chest.
Time to cut me open?
I'm sorry, the doctor answered, but we need to begin.
The rat man was just about to speak again when a blaring alarm erupted throughout the building. Thomas's heart lurched, and relief flooded his system. It had to be the right arm. The door swung open, and Thomas turned just in time to see a frantic-looking woman announce,
A burg arrived with a delivery, but it was a trick to get people inside. They're trying to take over the main building this very second.
Jansen's response almost stopped Thomas's heart.
Looks like we need to hurry and get this procedure started. Christensen, put him under.
Chapter 61 Thomas's chest constricted and his throat seemed to swell. Everything was on the line, but he was frozen. Jansen barked orders.
Dr. Christensen, quickly! Who knows what these people are up to, but we can't waste a second now. I'll go tell operating personnel to stand their ground no matter what.
Wait, Thomas finally croaked. I don't know if I can do this.
The words felt empty. He knew they wouldn't stop at this point. Jansen's face burned red. Instead of answering Thomas, he turned to the doctor.
Do whatever it takes to open this kid up.
Just as Thomas opened his mouth to speak, something sharp pricked his arm, sending jolts of heat through his body, and he went limp, collapsing onto the gurney. From his neck down, he was numb, and terror flared inside him. Dr. Christensen leaned over him and passed a spent syringe to a nurse.
I'm really sorry, Thomas. We have to do this.
The doctor and a nurse pushed him farther onto the bed, hoisting his legs up so that he lay flat on his back. Thomas could move his head slightly from side to side, but that was all. The sudden turn of events overwhelmed him as he realized the implications. He was about to die. Unless, somehow, the right arm got to him immediately, he was going to die. Jansen stepped into his view. Nodding approvingly, the rat man patted the doctor on the shoulder.
Get it done.
Then he turned and disappeared. Thomas could hear someone shouting in the hallway before the door closed.
I just need to run a few tests, Dr. Christensen explained. Then we'll get you into the operating room.
He turned to fiddle with some instruments behind him. It felt like the man spoke to him from 100 miles away. Thomas lay helpless, his mind spinning as the doctor took blood, measured his skull. The man worked in silence, barely blinking. But the beads of sweat on his forehead showed that he was racing against who knew what. Did he have an hour to get this done? Several hours? Thomas closed his eyes. He wondered if the weapons disabling device had done its job. Wondered if anyone would find him. Then he realized, did he even want them to? Was it really possible that Wicked almost had a cure? He forced himself to breathe evenly, focus on trying to move his limbs, but nothing happened. The doctor suddenly straightened and grinned at Thomas.
I believe we're ready. We'll wheel you to the operating room now.
The man walked through the door, and Thomas's gurney was pushed into the hallway. Unable to move, he lay staring up at the lights in the ceiling, flashing by as he rolled down the corridor. He finally had to close his eyes. They'd put him to sleep. The world would fade, and he'd be dead. He snapped his eyes open again, closed them. His heart pounded. His hands grew sweaty, and he realized he was gripping the sheets on the gurney in 2 balled fists. Movement was coming back, slowly. Eyes open again. The lights zooming by. Another turn, then another. Despair threatened to squeeze the life out of Thomas before the doctors could do it. He started to say, but nothing else came out.
What?
Christensen asked, peering down at him. Thomas struggled to speak, but before he could force any words out, a thunderous boom rattled the hallway, and the doctor tripped, his weight pushing the gurney forward as he scrambled to stop himself from falling. The bed shot to the right and crashed into the wall, then rebounded and spun until it hit the other side. Thomas tried to move, but he was still paralyzed, helpless. He thought of Chuck and Newt, and a sadness like he'd never known seized his heart. Someone screamed from the direction of the explosion. Shouts followed. Then everything grew silent again, and the doctor was up on his feet, hurrying to the gurney, straightening it out, pushing it again, banging through a set of swinging doors. A host of people dressed in scrubs awaited them in a white operating room. Christensen started barking orders.
We have to hurry. Everyone get to your places. Lisa, get him fully sedated, now.
A short lady responded.
We haven't done all the prep.
It doesn't matter. As far as we know, the whole building's gonna burn down.
He placed the gurney next to an operating table. Several sets of hands were lifting Thomas and moving him over before the gurney even came to a complete stop. He settled on his back, strained to take in the beehive buzz of doctors and nurses, at least 9 or 10 of them. He felt a prick in his arm, glanced down to see the short lady inserting an IV into his vein. All the while, the only movement he could manage was in his hands. Lights were placed in a position just above him. Other things were stuck into his body in various places. Monitors started beeping. There was the hum of a machine, people talking over other people. The room was filled with the scurry of movement, like an orchestrated dance. And the lights, so bright. The room spinning, though he lay perfectly still. The rising terror of what they were doing to him. Knowing it was ending, right here, right now.
"I hope it works," he finally managed to get out.
A few seconds later, the drugs finally took him, and it all went away. Chapter 62. For a long time, Thomas knew only darkness. The break in the void of his thoughts was just a hairline crack, only wide enough to let him know about the void itself. Somewhere on the edge of it all, he knew that he was supposed to be asleep, kept alive only so they could inspect his brain, take it apart, probably slice by slice. So he wasn't dead yet. At some point, as he floated in this confusing mass of blackness, he heard a voice, calling his name. After hearing Thomas several times, he finally decided to go after it, find it. He made himself move toward the voice, toward his name. Chapter 63.
"Thomas, I have faith in you,"
a woman said to him as he fought to regain consciousness. He didn't recognize the voice, but it was somehow soft and authoritative at the same time. He continued struggling, heard himself moan, felt himself shifting in his bed. Finally, he opened his eyes. Blinking against the brightness of the overhead lights, he noticed a door closing behind whoever had been there to wake him.
"Wait,"
he said, but it came out as nothing more than a gravelly whisper. By force of will, he got his elbows under him and pushed himself up. He was alone in the room, the only sounds distant shouts and an occasional rumble like thunder. His mind began to clear, and he realized that other than a little grogginess, he felt fine. Which meant that, unless the miracles of science had really taken a leap, he also still had his brain. A manila folder on the table beside his bed caught his attention. In big red letters, "Thomas" had been written across the front of it. He swung his legs around to sit up on the edge of the mattress and grabbed the folder. There were two pieces of paper inside. The first was a map of the Wicked Complex, with black marker tracing several routes through the building. He quickly scanned the second. It was a letter, addressed to him and signed by Chancellor Page. He put the map down and started to read the letter from the beginning.
"Dear Thomas, it's my belief that the trials are over. We have more than enough data to create a blueprint. My associates disagree with me on this matter, but I was able to stop this procedure and save your life. It's now our task to work with the data we already have and build a cure for the flare. Your participation, and that of the other subjects, is no longer necessary. You now have a great task ahead of you. When I became Chancellor, I realized the importance of creating a back door of sorts to this building. I placed this back door in an unused maintenance room. I'm asking you to remove yourself, your friends, and the considerable number of immunes we've gathered. Time is of the essence, as I'm sure you're aware. There are three paths marked on the map I've enclosed. The first shows you how to leave this building through a tunnel. Once outside, you'll be able to find where the right arm has made their own entrance to another building. There, you can join them. The second route will show you how to get to the immunes. The third shows you how to find the back door. It's a flat trans that will transport you to what I hope will be a new life. Take them all and leave. Ava Page, Chancellor. Thomas stared at the paper, his mind in a spin. Another rumble sounded far away and jarred him back to reality. He trusted Brenda, and she trusted the Chancellor. All he could do now was move. He folded the letter and the map and stuffed them in his back pocket, then slowly stood up. Surprised at how quickly his strength had returned, he ran to the door. A peek out into the hallway showed that it was empty. He slipped out, and just as he did, two people came running by from behind. They didn't so much as glance at him, and Thomas realized that the chaos brought about by the right arm's attack might be the thing that ended up saving him. He pulled out the map and studied it carefully, following the black line that led to the tunnel. It wouldn't take long at all to get to it. He memorized the path and started jogging down the hall, scanning the other two paths Chancellor Page had marked on the map as he went. He had only gone a few yards when he stopped, stunned by what he was seeing. He pulled the map closer to make sure. Maybe he wasn't reading it right. But there was no mistaking what it showed. Wicked had hidden the immunes in the maze. Chapter 64. There were two mazes on the map, of course, the one for Group A and the one for Group B. Both must have been built deep into the bedrock that lay under the main buildings of Wicked's headquarters. Thomas couldn't tell which one he'd been directed to go to, but either way, he was going back to the maze. With a sickening dread, he started running toward Chancellor Page's tunnel. He followed the map and ran down hallway after hallway until he got to a long set of stairs that descended into a basement. The path took him through empty rooms and then, finally, to a small door that opened to a tunnel. The tunnel was dark, but Thomas was relieved to see, not completely black. Several uncovered light bulbs hung from the ceiling as he ran along the narrow corridor. After about 200 feet, he came to a ladder that had been marked on the map. Up he went, and at the top there was a round metal door with a wheel handle that reminded him of the entrance to the map room in the glade. He spun the handle and pushed with all his strength. A dim light came in as Thomas forced the door up, and as it flipped open on its hinges, a great gust of cold air blew over him. He heaved himself out and onto the ground next to a big rock in the barren, snow-covered land between the forest and Wicked headquarters. He carefully hefted the lid to the tunnel up and over to close it again, then crouched behind the stone. He didn't notice any movement, but the night was too dark to see very well. He looked up into the sky, and when he saw the same heavy gray clouds he'd noticed when he'd reached the complex, he realized that he had no idea how much time had passed since then. Had he been in the building for only a few hours, or had a full night and day come and gone? Chancellor Page's note said that the right arm had made their own entrance into the buildings, probably with the explosions Thomas had heard earlier, and that was where he needed to go first. He saw the wisdom of connecting with the group. There was safety in numbers, and he had to let them know where the immunes were hidden. Judging from the map, the best option Thomas had was to run to the cluster of buildings farthest from where he'd come out and search the area. He went for it, edging around the boulder and sprinting for the closest building. He crouched as he ran, trying to stay as low as possible. Lightning streaked through the sky. It illuminated the cement of the complex and flashed off the white snow. Thunder followed quickly, rumbling across the land and rattling deep in his chest. He reached the first building and pushed through the line of ragged bushes up against the wall. He edged along the side of the structure, but found nothing. He stopped when he came to the first corner and peered around it. In the space between buildings were a series of courtyards, but he still saw no way inside. He skirted the next two buildings, but as he approached the fourth one, he heard voices and immediately dropped to the ground. As quietly as he could, he scooted along the frozen dirt toward an overgrown bush, then peeked around it to search for the source of the noise. There it was. Rubble lay strewn across the yard in huge heaps, and behind them a massive hole had been blasted in the side of the building, which meant that the explosion had originated from the inside. A faint light shone from the opening, casting broken shadows on the ground.
Sitting on the edge of one of those shadows were two people wearing civilian clothes. The right arm. Thomas had started to stand up when an icy hand gripped his mouth tightly and he was jerked backward. Another arm wrapped around his chest and pulled him, dragging him along the ground. His feet burrowed through the snow. Thomas kicked out, struggling to free himself, but the person was too strong. They turned the corner of the building into another small courtyard, and Thomas was thrown to the ground on his stomach. His captor flopped him onto his back and clamped a hand again over Thomas's mouth. It was a man he didn't recognize. Another figure crouched over him as well. Jansen.
"I'm very disappointed," the ratman said. "Looks like not everyone in my organization is on the same team after all."
Thomas could do nothing but struggle against the person pinning him to the ground. Jansen sighed.
"I guess we're going to have to do this the hard way."
Chapter 65. Jansen pulled out a long, slender knife, held it up, and inspected it with narrowed eyes.
"Let me tell you something, kid. I've never thought of myself as a violent man, but you and your friends sure have driven me to the brink. My patience is stretched to a minimum, but I'm going to show restraint. Unlike you, I think about more than myself. I'm working to save people, and I will finish this project."
Thomas forced his every inch to relax, to be still. Struggling hadn't accomplished a thing, and he needed to save his energy for when the right opportunity presented itself. It was clear that the ratman had lost it, and judging from that blade, he was determined to get Thomas back in the operating room at any cost.
"That's a good boy. No need to fight this. You should be proud. It will be you and your mind that save the world, Thomas."
The man holding Thomas down, a squat guy with black hair, spoke then.
"I'm going to let go of your mouth now, boy. Let out one peep and A.D. Jansen's going to give you a nice poke with that blade of his, understand? We want you alive, but that doesn't mean you can't have a few war wounds."
Thomas nodded as calmly as he could, and the man let go of him and sat back.
"Smart boy."
It was Thomas's cue to go for it. He swung his leg violently to his right and kicked Jansen in the face. The man's head jerked backward, and his body crashed to the ground. The dark-haired man moved to tackle Thomas, but Thomas squirmed out from under him and went after Jansen again, this time kicking the hand that held the knife. It flew out of his grasp, skipping across the ground until it smacked into the side of the building. Thomas turned his attention to the blade, and that was all the squat man needed. He lunged at Thomas, who landed on his back on top of Jansen. Jansen squirmed beneath them as they wrestled, and Thomas felt a desperation seize him, adrenaline exploding through his body. He screamed and pushed, kicked, fought his way out from between the two men. Scrabbling and clawing with his hands and feet, he got loose and dove toward the building for the knife. He landed next to it, grabbed it, and spun around, expecting an immediate attack. Both men were just getting to their feet, obviously stunned by his sudden burst of strength. Thomas stood up as well, holding the knife out in front of him.
"Just let me go. Just walk away and let me go. I swear if you come after me, I'm going to go crazy with this thing and won't stop stabbing till you're both dead. I swear it."
"It's two against one, kid," Jansen said. "I don't care if you have a knife."
"You've seen what I can do," Thomas replied, trying to sound as dangerous as he felt. "You've watched me in the maze and the scorch."
He almost wanted to laugh at the irony. They had made him into a killer. To save people? The short guy scoffed.
"If you think we're..."
Thomas reared back and threw the knife as he'd seen Galley do, handle over blade. It cartwheeled through the space between them and slammed into the man's neck. There was no blood at first, but he reached up, shock transforming his face, and clawed at the knife stuck in him. That was when the blood came, spurting in jets in time with his heartbeat. He opened his mouth, but before he could speak, he collapsed to his knees.
"You little—"
Jansen whispered, his eyes wide with horror as he stared at his colleague. Thomas was shocked by what he'd done and froze to the spot, but the moment broke as Jansen turned his head to look back at him. Thomas burst into a sprint out of the courtyard, around the corner of the building. He had to get back to the hole in the building, had to get back inside.
"Thomas!"
Jansen shouted. Thomas heard his footsteps in pursuit.
"Get back here! You have no idea what you're doing!"
Thomas didn't even pause. He passed the bush he'd hidden behind and ran full bore toward the gaping hole in the side of the building. A man and a woman still sat nearby, crouched on the ground so that their backs touched. Upon seeing Thomas, they both clambered to their feet.
"I'm Thomas," he yelled at them just as they opened their mouths to ask questions. "I'm on your side."
They exchanged a look, then returned their attention to Thomas just as he skidded to a stop in front of them. Heaving for breath, he turned to look back, saw the shadowed figure of Jansen running toward them, maybe 50 feet away.
"They've been looking all over for you," the mail guard said. "But you're supposed to be in there."
He jabbed a finger at the hole.
"Where's everybody? Where's Vince?"
Thomas panted. And as he spoke, he knew Jansen was still tearing after him. Thomas turned to face the rat man, whose face was screwed up in unnatural rage. It was a look Thomas had seen before. It was the same insane anger he'd seen in Newt. The rat man had the flair. Jansen spoke between heavy breaths.
"That boy is property of Wicked. Hand him over."
The lady didn't flinch.
"Wicked doesn't mean a pile of goose crap to me, old man. If I were you, I'd get lost, and I wouldn't go back inside either. Bad things are about to happen to your friends in there."
The rat man didn't respond, just kept panting, his eyes darting between Thomas and the others. Finally, he started to back away slowly.
"You people don't get it. Your self-righteous arrogance will be the end of everything. I hope you can live with that while you rot in hell."
Then he turned and ran away, disappearing into the gloom.
"What did you do to piss him off?" the lady asked.
Thomas tried to catch his breath.
"Long story. I need to find Vince, or whoever's in charge. I need to find my friends."
"Calm down there, kid," the man responded. "Things are kind of quiet right now. People getting in position, planting, that sort of thing."
"Planting?"
Thomas asked.
"Planting.
What does that mean?"
"Explosives, you idiot. We're about to bring this whole building down. Show old Wicked that we mean serious business."
Chapter 66. Everything came into focus at that moment for Thomas. There'd been a fanaticism about Vince that hadn't fully hit him until now. And there was the way the right arm had treated Thomas and his friends in the van after taking them hostage at the Berg. Also, why did they have all those explosives but no real conventional weapons? It didn't make sense unless their goal was to destroy, not take over. The right arm wasn't exactly on the same page as he was. Maybe they thought their motives were pure, but Thomas was beginning to realize that the organization had a darker purpose. He needed to step carefully. All that mattered at that moment was saving his friends and finding and releasing the others who'd been captured. The lady's voice interrupted Thomas's thoughts.
"You're doing a lot of heavy thinking in that noggin of yours."
"Yeah, sorry.
When do you think they're going to set off the explosives?"
"Pretty soon, I suppose. They've been planning for hours. They want them all to detonate at the same time, but I'm guessing we aren't quite that skilled."
"What about all the people inside? What about the ones we came to rescue?"
The two of them looked at each other, then shrugged.
"Vince hopes to get everyone out."
"He hopes? What does that mean?"
"He hopes."
"I need to talk to him."
What Thomas really wanted was to find Minho and Brenda. Right arm or no right arm, he knew what they had to do. Get to the maze and lead everyone out of there to the flat trams. The lady pointed to the hole in the side of the building.
"Just through there a ways is an area they've pretty much taken over. You'll probably find Vince there. Careful, though. Wicked's got guards hiding all over the place, and they're vicious little buggers."
"Thanks for the warning."
Thomas turned, eager to get inside. The hole loomed over him, dusty darkness waiting within.
There were no more alarms or flashing red lights. He stepped through. At first, Thomas didn't see or hear anything. He walked on in silence, careful of what might be around each turn. The lights got brighter the farther he walked, and he finally spotted a door at the end of the hallway that had been propped open. He jogged to it and peered in to see a large room with tables scattered across the floor set on their sides like shields. Several people crouched behind them. The people were watching a large set of double doors on the other side of the room, and no one noticed him as he squeezed against the doorframe, hiding most of his body from the inside. He leaned his head in to get a better look. He spotted Vince and Galley behind one of the tables, but didn't recognize anyone else. On the far left side of the room, there was a small office, and he could tell that at least 9 or 10 people were huddled inside. He strained to see, but he couldn't make out any faces. "Hey," he whispered as loudly as he dared. "Hey, Galley!" The boy turned immediately, but had to glance around a few seconds before he spotted Thomas. Galley squinted as though he thought his eyes might be tricking him. Thomas waved to make sure he saw him, and Galley motioned for him to come over. Thomas looked around again to make sure it was safe. Then he crouched down, ran over to the table, and collapsed on the ground next to his old nemesis. He had so many questions, he didn't know where to begin.
"What happened?" Galley asked him. "What did they do to you?"
Vince shot him a glare, but didn't say anything. Thomas didn't know how to answer. "They ran a few tests. Look, I found out where they're keeping the immunes. You can't blow the place up until we get them out."
"Then go get them," Vince said. "We've got a one-shot deal here, and I'm not going to waste it."
"You brought some of those people here." Thomas looked to Galley for support, but he only got a shrug in response. Thomas was on his own. "Where's Brenda, Mino, everyone else?" he asked. Galley nodded toward the side room.
"Those guys are all in there. Said they wouldn't do anything until you came back."
Thomas suddenly felt sorry for the scarred boy beside him.
"Come with me, Galley. Let these guys do whatever they want, but come help us. Don't you wish someone had done the same for us when we were in the maze?"
Vince spun on them.
"Don't even think about it," he barked. "Thomas, you knew coming in here what our goals were. If you abandon us now, I'll consider you a turncoat. You'll be a target."
Thomas kept his focus on Galley. He saw a sadness in the boy's eyes that made his heart break. And he also saw something he'd never seen there before. Trust. Genuine trust.
"Come with us," Thomas said.
A smile formed on his old enemy's face, and he responded in a way Thomas never would have expected.
"Okay."
Thomas didn't wait for Vince to react. He grabbed Galley's arm and they scooted away from the table together, then ran to the office and slipped inside. Minho was the first to him, pulling him into a bear hug as Galley watched awkwardly from the side. Then the others were there. Minho, Brenda, Jorge, Teresa, even Eris. Thomas almost got dizzy from the quick exchange of hugs and words of relief and welcome. He was especially thrilled to see Brenda, and he held on to her longer than anyone else. But as good as it felt, he knew they didn't have time for it. He pulled away.
"I can't explain everything right now. We have to go find the immunes Wicked took, then find this back door flat trans I learned about, and we need to hurry before the right arm blows this place up."
"Where are the immunes?" Brenda asked.
"Yeah, what did you learn?" Minho added.
Thomas never thought he'd say what he had to say next.
"We need to go back to the maze."
Chapter 67. Thomas showed them the letter he'd discovered next to him in the recovery room, and it only took a few moments for them all to agree, even Teresa and Galley, to abandon the right arm and set off on their own. Set off for the maze. Brenda looked at